Melbourne wins another one.
Redemption for Golden State. One of the great playoff runs of all time is complete. The Warriors are NBA champions again.
This is the SportsCess podcast on Sin. Yes, hello all, and welcome to this week's edition of the SportsCess podcast here on Sin. This is the first edition of the podcast for 2018. I am Ben Pascuzzi, and I'm joined by Tom and Caleb, who is also on our Wednesday show. But Tom, you are from the country. You are also on a couple other shows here on Sin. Just introduce yourself to the audience.
Yeah, sure. Well, I'm Tom Parry. I'm currently working with Art Smitten, which is the arts and culture show on Sin Nation, and I'm travelling between here in Melbourne and Bendigo to contribute to all the shows. This is my first time on Sin, actually, so this is the first ever podcast I've done, and I'm really looking forward to it.
Didn't tell me you're from Bendigo. I'm from Bendigo as well.
Really?
Oh, here we go.
Where did you go to school?
Bendigo Southeast.
Really?
Yourself?
Yeah.
No way.
Wow. Are you sure you haven't set this up? Because I came in late. Are you stitching me up?
When did you graduate?
2013.
2010.
No way. Okay. You were at the same school together.
It's not a stitch
and
up.
And you're the same year as my sister as well.
Who's your sister?
Alicia.
Yep.
Wow, so I don't believe that.
Are you guys stitching me up?
No, seriously.
We're just going to talk about local Bendigo footy for the next hour. And
this is not the SportsCess podcast. All right, anyway, back to the show. We're pretty much going to be talking a lot of cricket. Obviously, the big bash season coming to a conclusion. There's a bit of tennis there. Davis Cup, unfortunately, not going too well for us. We are out of the Davis Cup for this season. As always, there'll be AFL. There's also a bit of basketball, a lot of talk about the NBA All-Star season and potential moves, and obviously soccer and NFL. But anyways, without further ado, we'll start off with the cricket. And before we start into the cricket, I should mention how the format of the podcast works. It's pretty much a series of questions that are yes, no. You give your answer, yes or no, and then you come up with an explanation for why you have given that answer, and then we can form a conversation off that. So that's for your audiences. We're going to keep the podcast the same format as previous seasons. So without further ado, the first question, which is from cricket and in relation to the Big Bash. So should the Big Bash final have been played at 4:40 rather than 7:40 like it has been all season and previous seasons? Now, this has been... We think it's obviously done for the I'm a Celebrity Get Me Out of Here show, so Channel 10 could still broadcast that straight after the Big Bash. And obviously the follow-up question for that is, should Cricket Australia or sporting organisations have a bigger say and keep the scheduling consistent? So a two-part question there.
I'll take it off. We were talking a little bit when we were going through the run sheet beforehand, and I didn't realise that that was why it was scheduled at 4:40. So originally I thought 4:40 is a great time to be... playing sport. I love twilight footy. I love twilight cricket. We caught the end of the game then, and I thought it looked like it was awesome conditions in Adelaide. But upon hearing that it was most likely done for I'm a Celebrity Get Me Out of Here, I think that's a bit soft from Cricket Australia. It's a bit disappointing from Channel 10 because I don't know about you guys. I'm not a huge I'm a Celebrity Get Me Out of Here fan.
I was only interested when Tomic was in.
and he left after 3 days.
Yeah.
So
I literally watched the first show and that's it. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. And I just think that seems to be the way that channels are going. They're using their sports where they know they get dedicated viewers that aren't going to pre-record and skip the ads, and that's where they just bombard you with ads for their other shows so that you go and watch it. So it's a no from me.
I think it's a really sad reflection of not just Channel 10 but television in general, how we tend to like bump all our major sporting events to make way for these trashy reality TV shows. I mean, if you look at the ratings for the Big Bash, they're averaging about 1 million viewers every game, which for primetime over summer is really, really good.
Yeah.
And yet here they are making way for a show which barely... I don't know what the exact figures are, but they're little more than 1 million. They're not as big as everyone would see. So, you know, I really think that Cricket Australia, they should man up. And I shouldn't say man up, but they really should.
Yeah, you can't really say that in this day and age.
No, sorry. Poor choice of words there on my behalf. But they really should, you know, gain some courage and say to Channel 10, look, we're spending millions and millions of dollars for you to broadcast the rights to this game. And by shifting it to make way for one of your own programs, it's putting us at a disadvantage. So,
What about you, Ben? Are you on the same wavelength?
Yeah, I'm pretty much on the same wavelength. I mean, 4:40, it's an all right time, but seriously, the whole season has pretty much been played at night time, and that's when you get your prime time viewers. There's no secret about that. The twilight sports don't get as many viewers as night sports. And even though it is on a Sunday, you're not going to get as many viewers as, say, on a 7:40. And, I mean, how about the spectacle for a night match? I mean, the Twilight match we saw, it was great, but it was under lights. And, you know, if light was fading, could have been played at night at the Adelaide Oval, and that is spectacular under lights, mind you. But, yeah, it's clearly been done for Almost Liberty to get me out of here. And they've done this throughout the whole Big Bash season, just promoting it. They've been bombarding us with ads. And, yeah, for them to do this is just a big slap in the face, I guess, for sports fans in general, because it's just been a huge uproar in terms of all fans who've really disliked the choice to play a final at 4:40 on a Sunday.
Yeah, just 2 points to pick up on there. It's not unusual for networks to be like advertising over to summer, like Channel 9 doing the cricket, Channel 7 with the tennis. So I'm okay with that. The issue I have is today's February 4th. And school's back. We've got school tomorrow morning. And generally on a Sunday afternoon, people aren't going out and watching sport. They're generally doing their own thing, especially over summer. So to put it on at 4:00 in the afternoon on a Sunday, I think is just ludicrous.
Yeah,
fair enough. I mean, I was at the footy with Savo, so I only caught the last couple of overs. There you go.
Yeah, that was the other thing, actually. We've got the AFLW, which has started up this weekend, and now you've got the 2020 games competing with it. I mean, I think AFL is going to win easily.
Yeah, well, you've kept the 2020 at night time throughout the whole season. Mm. If anything, what they could have done is instead of playing it on a Sunday at twilight, they could have played it on a Saturday night and actually moved the semi-finals maybe a day or two in front. So they played the semis on the Thursday and the Friday night. Why not play it on, say, a Tuesday, Wednesday night, and then or Wednesday, Thursday, whatever, and then play it on a Saturday night? If that was an issue, they could have done that. But obviously, the Thursday, Friday is perfect. It just needed to be on a Sunday night, I think.
So, yeah, I think that's a perfect idea.
Yeah. We all agree on that.
Yeah, agreed. Next question was, this is something that was brought up by Damien Fleming on his commentary about the wide line. So as we know it, it is currently any balls that go down the leg side are pretty much called wide straight away. And there's quite a lot of leniency on their offside. Damien Fleming suggesting that maybe that offside wide line could be brought in a little bit and the leg side wide could be widened. Yes or no, Ben, what do you reckon?
I actually quite like it because the wide line on the offside is quite wide. Mm. So there's a lot of wides in that sentence. It's quite wide, and bowlers, I think Fleming was pretty much suggesting that bowlers target it a lot, and they do, but he's suggesting that it's negative bowling and negative cricket, and I kind of tend to agree with that. Yeah, it's great skill bowling it out there wide, but I mean, really, we just want to see runs, and we just want to see a really good contest between bat and ball. And if they're just consistently putting it down that wide line right inside it, I mean, we're not going to really see a good contest. So I actually quite like it if they bring it in. I don't know, a couple of what it'd be 20 centimeters. Yeah. I'm not sure how.
Wouldn't be that much.
Wouldn't be that much.
Ish. Yeah.
Yeah. So if they bring it in slightly, and even the leg side wise, I'd like to see it extended a little bit because they're extremely harsh on that, I think. And I mean, it is. I know what they've done with that. They've done basically the same thing. It's like negative cricket and all that. But I mean, leg side balls are actually potentially a wicket taking ball.
That's
and if
it.
if they're bowling it just down leg side, almost going to hit the pads, almost going to hit the stumps, and they're called a wide, I think it's a bit stiff. So I'm a yes, I'm a supporter for that.
Sure.
Tom? Well, I'm actually quite happy with the leg side rule. I think if you're trying to, especially if you play cricket, trying to play down the leg side there, it's really difficult. And in a Big Bash game, when it's all about runs and the spectacle, you know, having a bowler take it down the leg side one too many times, it just gets irritating. But as for the offside rule, I completely agree with Fleming there. I think that they should reduce that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the amount of times you see a ball heading out wide and then the umpire's going, yeah, that's fine, you know, you can make that.
Because it is, because it's inside the line. Yeah.
But
it's annoying.
So they should, shorten it both sides, I reckon.
Yep, I agree with you both. The only other thing I'll add is that a lot of people complain that cricket is becoming a batter's game. But coming from a fan's perspective, I think more runs is always better. And that was exemplified tonight.
Still get a good contest between bat and ball, even if it's shortened.
Yeah, so if you compare the 2020, the international 2020 on Saturday night, bit of a fizzle because there was not many runs. I mean, it's great that Billy Stanlake took those wickets early, but in terms of the spectacle, I think more runs for cricket's always good. So shortening the wide thing and keeping it closer to the batter, it's a yes from me.
Well, speaking about international T20s, there's been talk a lot on public radio and TV about the potential in the future for one-day cricket. So with the success of T20 cricket around the globe, more and more T20 internationals being played, more tournaments, more money being on offer, is there an actual future for one-day cricket, and will we see it in 10 years' time, one-day cricket? Will it still be around?
I think so. So I think that one-day cricket, particularly for television, it's really good because you only have to watch it within the day. As for test cricket, I can't see that being televised on free-to-air TV within a decade or so, because over 5 days, not a lot of viewers because it's daytime cricket, and it tends to be done over a weekday as well, which is another, you know, loss of revenue, loss of viewership. But one-day cricket, I think it still has a future. It's sort of like a lengthened 2020 game and branching out into test cricket. So it's sort of like a, what do you call it? It's sort of like sandwiched between the two, in a way.
Well, the only thing I'd question with that first point you made about missing out on other TV shows, I always felt that tests was great for those commercial TV shows because during that time, they were only really playing filler shows. So it was your Ready, Steady, Cook, your repeats of last night.
Mash,
so tests, because they start quite early in the morning, I'm not sure of the ratings specifically or the viewerships, but I always thought, just going off a rough estimate, that tests and sport would get more viewers than, say, your filler or rerun that would be on during the day. And well, then still offers for that 6 o'clock news, and then they can play their higher viewership shows at night.
So I do agree with you there, but the issue is with test cricket, it usually starts in November when like uni exams are on and school exams are on and most people are still working, so there aren't the viewers there to watch it, and if they are, they're being distracted while they're in the office or something like that.
Yeah.
So that's my thought anyway.
Fair. Yeah, yeah.
For me, one day cricket, this is a tough one because I think for fans of cricket in general and huge fans of cricket, they like one-day cricket. However, for the casual supporter, I don't think one-day cricket is a viable option for them. Mm-hmm. So it's hard. I'm going to be controversial. I'm actually going to say maybe in 10 years, one-day cricket will most likely be given the boot, unfortunately. I am a huge fan of one-day cricket, but I think it may be just kept for, say, like a junior. It might just be for World Cups. That's it.
Yep.
I think actually that probably should have been the question. Will one-day cricket just be maybe like a World Cup, or will it be still played around the world like this? But, yeah, the future is probably not going to be there for it. There's dwindling crowds all over the globe now with one-day cricket. It's just not as popular as it used to be. And obviously with T20 cricket boosting its popularity, and test cricket's still pretty much not going to be perched off the top there, I don't think, in 10 years, maybe around, unfortunately. Even though I'm a huge fan of it.
Yeah, I agree.
I love it. I don't think it will be purely because of that.
Yeah, and I just think, like, with all the fixturing problems that they had this year, with players being wanting to play 2020 and one day and test, I think one day will probably be the one that they deprioritise. Deprioritise. But that'll probably be the one that you'll see more players preferencing test or 2020. Yeah. And I just think one day is probably going to be left behind. And it was a pretty boring one day series, I thought, the England-Australia one. I feel like it was almost like there wasn't much interest at all going on.
It was a reverse Ashes as well, because we annihilated them.
That's probably
in the test.
Yeah.
And then one day as they, you know, went up 4-1, was it?
4-1, yeah.
Yeah, 4-1. Still winning the ledger there. Was it 5? Yeah, 5-4.
4-0. I think there was a draw.
It's
in the Ashes.
Four.
So, the Boxing Day test was a tie.
That's right,
so,
yeah.
So it's 5-4 out.
So, aggregate, we win.
Yeah.
All right. Moving on from cricket, we'll stick to tennis now. And Todd Woodbridge, he made comments early in the week about the future of Davis Cup tennis, stating the format will not last much longer. Is he right?
I think he's absolutely correct, because nowadays tennis
someone's
is
a bit happy.
anyway, nowadays tennis is more of an individual sport. There's less of that team camaraderie that we're seeing, especially with the Bernard Tomic affair. How he, you know, rather than represent Australia, decided to, you know, go off and join a reality TV show. But it's getting really difficult to schedule these games as well, because along with the individual tournaments, you've got things like the Olympic Games, Commonwealth Games coming up, even though tennis isn't a sport there. But anyhow, so they have other commitments to meet, and to ask them to represent this their country in this really obscure format. I mean, what is it, like two doubles, two singles? That they have to play,
it's two singles, like two singles on the first day, one doubles on the second, and then the two single grubbers on the final day.
Yeah, so yeah, I've never understood the format for Davis Cup, but yeah, in short, I agree with Todd. I think it's not going to be around much longer.
Yeah, look, I'm not a, I'm one of the tennis fans that jumps on for 2 weeks of the year during the Oz Open.
Bandwagon.
Yeah, big time.
Get out of here.
So I just leave the studio. But I just, I have always felt like the Davis Cup falls at the wrong time for a fan like me. And I'm probably assuming that there's a couple more in the same boat, that after the Oz Open, they probably have watched enough tennis for 12 months and they jump off. So in terms of format, yeah, I agree completely, Tom. It sounds like there's a lot more individuals, even good individuals, like you see Roger Federer and things like that. It is more of an individual sport, so I don't think it has the longevity.
Yeah, well, I actually quite like Davis Cup, but yeah, I tend to agree. It's probably not going to last much longer, maybe another 10 years, if that. Yeah, it's pretty much tennis is now is just all about individual motives now, all about the how much money you can win
counting
for yourself.
Millions.
Counting millions, quote Ben Atomic there. But yeah, it's, I mean, the formatting and the way Davis Cup is scheduled pretty much straight after Grand Slams in the between huge tournaments. I mean, yeah, it's probably not viable for the future. However, I do like there was a new tournament introduced last season, the Laver Cup. And that's pretty much two all-star teams. So it was a combination of Europe versus the rest of the world.
Cool.
So maybe something like that could be the way to go
for the
future.
It's like state of origin, but on a bigger scale.
Yeah, but on a bigger scale. So that may be the way to go, because Davis Cup is just so long and it goes throughout the whole season. It's, as much as I love it, I don't think it's going to last much longer. I agree with Woodbridge.
Fair enough. Next one we've got with the AFL broadcasting every AFL X game next weekend, broadcasting them live, but they're only broadcasting the marquee AFL women's game. So we saw two this weekend. The question there is the league taking the women's format seriously?
You know, I think they have been taking it quite seriously. I mean, we've seen they've been pushing prime time, keeping it out of the way of the men's tournament. So in that sense, they are taking it seriously. But in this second season, as you said, they've screening less games live. We're not seeing as much as the women's we really should. So it's, you know, beginning to die off a bit. Maybe they've lost faith in the women to draw in the crowds or something like that. I don't know. But I really do think that after the big show they put on for last year's season, they should really be paying more attention to the women's format. Because in my view, it's far more interesting than the men's game. Even though there's a lower scoring contest, the quality of the games is equal to that of the men, I believe.
And it's only going to improve as well once they become fitter, and once they get used to the rigours of professional football. All these young girls coming through, they're pretty much going to train their house down after that coaching and development, onwards and upwards.
We've seen it already this week. There's been a huge improvement in the skills already.
Yeah.
Like, it was a huge difference between the Carlton and Collingwood game of the first 2017 than there is with the 2018. I got a stat here from Sarah Black, who's on Sin. In round one, there was 28 goals scored, and round one this year, across all games, there was 35 goals. So it's baby steps, but it's exciting. Yeah.
Still an improvement.
But back to the topic, the question of is the league taking it serious? I think it's probably a bit rough to bash the AFL on this one. I think, like you said, Tom, they're doing a lot of great things by pushing the AFL women's. They're offering the games for free. You can watch all the games free on your mobile device as well. And then when you look at the AFL men's, apart from the AFL X, obviously, but they don't broadcast all the games live. So they do have to give some games to Fox. And Foxtel are broadcasting all the AFL women's games anyway. So I think it's a bit unfair to slam the AFL. Like, as sports fans, I'm sure we would all love it to be on free-to-air, but a bit unrealistic from my perspective.
Yeah, the other issue there is probably revenue, which is why they're sending it to Foxtel, because even though Channel 7 offers it to free for everyone, then the Foxtel games are what bring the money in for them, because
Correct.
They're gaining the exclusive rights, they've got subscribers, et cetera, et cetera.
Yes, and I don't think you can... Yeah, it would be fantastic if everything was for free, but obviously if we want the players to keep getting played and improving, then we need to have those exclusive rights.
True, yeah.
Yeah, I'm actually going to slam the AFL on this one. Sorry, boys.
Give them the heat.
Yeah, well, seriously, I mean, there was a huge success last season with the AFLW. Sure. And obviously, they didn't show every single game on free-to-air. They pretty much showed as many as they could. And this season, there's a lot less. And if they want this format, if they want this league to get bigger and more popular, it has been clear throughout years that doing so, broadcasting the majority of games and pretty much every game on free-to-air television, you are going to get the numbers, you are going to get the support. So for them to do this and pretty much to broadcast every AFLX game live is, I think, is a bit of a slap in the face.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I do see the future in AFLX. Obviously, it's on the soccer field. It can grow the game. But, I mean, there's already a proven format here in the AFLW.
Mm.
It's got fans. You are obviously allowing free entry and stuff. So why not broadcast every game? Why not? I don't see any issue in doing so. I mean, obviously, there's all this talk about revenue and all that. But seriously, you got a good format here. You're going to broadcast a new format every game live. That's a real slap in the face, I think, for the AFLW and in terms of their growth. So I'm slamming the AFL on that.
Yeah,
I think they should broadcast every game on free-to-air.
Ben, I think you should probably explain to people who don't know, because there'll be many who won't know at all. What is the AFLX?
AFLX is what? It's seven-a-side.
Mm-hmm.
Seven-a-side, fast-paced football game played on a soccer field, soccer field-sized game. There's, what are the extra points for, well, there's a whole range of extra points.
Nine points outside the 40-metre mark or something like that, and six points
from
inside the 40-metre mark.
Yeah. To put it short, it's pretty much a way for the AFL to grow the game globally, to have the game played on a smaller field, which is a soccer field.
Mm.
So it's pretty much the way that is. There's also like a last touch rule, which has also been introduced into the AFLW. But yeah, it's pretty much just a smash and grab, hopefully to promote the future of AFL football, which I think is viable anyway. But yeah, it's played on a soccer field.
Yep.
So for those to know, it's pretty much just a trial, and yeah.
So, rant over.
Yeah,
that's right. But if the intention's to bring it into more overseas audiences, why aren't they pitching it overseas then? Why do they feel the need to start here where we're already familiar with the game?
I agree completely. Like it's I think the AFL's looked at Cricket 2020 and Rugby Sevens and all those kind of things and seem like, oh, this kicked off. But that's probably the best thing about AFL. It's something that
has remained
unchanged for so many years, bar the rules. But it's just been something that it keeps growing regardless. It doesn't need a T20. It doesn't need a modified version. But I get it from the pushing it overseas is fantastic. But, yeah, totally doesn't make sense to pitch it to Australians. Correct.
Right, okay, so next, can we talk about basketball?
Honestly, why not?
Sure can.
Yeah, why not? So, we've got the NBA All-Stars teams were just announced, and one controversial choice being left out was Ben Simmons, the Australian who's playing for Philadelphia. So, Caleb, what are your thoughts on that? Do you think he's been short-shifted?
I don't think so. I think it's easy to just be patriotic and everyone, I think every second Fox Sports article was pining for Ben Simmons to be replacing. I think Kevin Love got injured. John Wall got injured first, was it? And then Kevin Love.
No, it was DeMarcus Cousins.
Sorry,
John Wall, then Kevin Love.
Yeah, and the first one happened and people were whispering again, maybe Ben Simmons, and then it just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger. But then after that, I just don't think it. It's hard to view it without bias because I'm a big Australian fan. I love Ben Simmons. Maybe next year. And Ben, you brought it up on Wednesday. LeBron James didn't make his All-Star team.
Yeah, so there's still hope. You can still compare it. I was originally saying that, no, he wasn't hard done by Simmons. But looking at this, particularly for the third selection, replacing Kevin Love with Goran Dragic. If you look at the stats, Ben Simmons actually leads Goran Dragic in pretty much all facets. So he leads him in points, rebounds, assists, steals, everything pretty much. I remember seeing a post on Facebook.
Yeah, yeah.
I tried to find it, but I couldn't. He does lead him in all of that.
Uh-huh.
And Dragic, he's what, 30-odd? Simmons, yeah, very old. So I think they've gone off the coach's vote, so I'm not sure what he does to to get the coaches votes in terms of that. But if you look at purely on stats, Simmons is hard done by. But I'm not too fast. I don't feel he's really unlucky. But if you look stats-wise, he is.
Yeah, so absolutely agree, Ben. Stats-wise, he has been short-shifted because he's been breaking record after record.
Yeah.
And he's a rookie. This is his very first season in the NBA. So for me personally, to see him not join this All-Star team is just disappointing, really.
Absolutely. And then off that with the NBA, do we like the new format for the All-Star team? So previously, it used to be purely fans voted in the starting five and then the coaches would choose the bench. This year, we've seen a pool of players voted in from each side, and then I think it was LeBron and Steph Curry get to choose their starters from that pool, and then the bench was filled out. One of my favourite videos was, I don't know if you saw it, was Russell Westbrook looking shattered because his name was at the bottom of the list. And the
I saw that.
The reporter explains to him it's in alphabetical order.
Yeah, and then he told whoever it was, I told you so, it was in alphabetical order. Yeah, I remember that.
Fan, Ben?
Yeah, I love it.
That's cool.
We've always wanted to see the East and the West combine, I guess, and really see the best players on show. I mean, obviously, they're still keeping the East and the West separate in terms of like the votes and stuff, but seeing them play together, I mean, like, how good is it going to be to see LeBron James and Kevin Durant line up together
in the All-Star phenomenal match?
And also, one other thing, they've actually increased the amount of prize money for the winning team. It's gone up from $50,000 to $100,000. So for NBA players, it may not be that much, but
they find that according to Kyrie, in the couch, don't they?
Kyrie said he's like, oh, this is actually good now.
Really?
The $100,000. He may actually take it seriously. So hopefully they do take it seriously because the AFL, not the AFL, the NBA All-Star matches in previous seasons have been a bit of a fizzer. So hopefully we see a more competitive one, but I love it. I love the new All-Star format.
Were they fizzers because they were public votes rather than coach votes?
They're fizzers pretty much because I don't think they care.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's like, it's just a game in the middle of the season.
No defense.
They're more focused, they're more focused on their team success rather than showcasing for the fans. And yeah, like Caleb said, there's no defense. And it's just, what, three-pointers, dunks, it's all that. It's just, effectively, it's not really that fun to watch.
Okay, then. So moving on to our next basketball-related question, and it is, does LeBron James leave Cleveland at the end of this season?
Interesting. Seen a lot of rumours, and obviously the most recent one was that he said he would go to Golden State, which I'm sure everyone would have just cringed at because it's not fair. But, I mean,
I'd maybe consider not watching the NBA.
Yeah. It just takes a super team to an even more super team. So
super team.
Yeah.
Why doesn't he go back to Miami? I mean,
he should just sign a contract where every 2 years he just fluctuates from Miami to Cleveland back and forth.
No, I remember seeing this YouTube video which basically joked that Cleveland's economy is based solely on LeBron James.
I mean, that
wouldn't surprise me.
Because, you know, he means so much to the city, and to see him move again would be devastating. There might even be a full-on riot this time around.
Could you imagine having that much responsibility that if you choose a city to go to, you will boost their economy and make so many more people happy?
Yeah, it's like the Matthew Richardson effect in a way.
Pretty much. What do you reckon, Tom? Do you think maybe 76ers or...
No, I honestly can't see him moving again. I mean, he already tried moving to Miami. He didn't have a lot of luck. As you say, Golden State, they are the dominant team on the West Coast. But no, I think he'll just stick to where he is.
Yep.
Yeah, I can't see him moving again.
Ben?
Well, if he was going to move, I think he should have and would have signed by now.
Yeah.
So
good point.
I think he will leave, unfortunately, even though as much as I want to see him stay there, I think he's gone. He doesn't have any good relationship with Dan Gilbert, the past owner. So he's gone, I think. If so, which I just said, I don't know why I said that, he's going to go to, I reckon, it's going to be LA. And it's going to be out of the Clippers and the Lakers. I'd like to see him go to the Clippers. Obviously, the Clippers aren't the dominant or the number one team there in Los Angeles. But, I mean, for him to go to the Clippers, imagine the storyline. So say he delivers the Clippers a championship. That'll be their first championship. And imagine the kind of thing that'll do to his legacy. So if he goes to even the Lakers, obviously, he probably won't bring him a championship there. They're a young team. Clippers, likewise. But just the storyline, if he can bring the Clippers a championship, will be enormous. And no one's brought the Clippers a championship. Yeah. If LeBron goes there, brings him a championship, he can say that, and he can have that one over MJ.
Correct.
The film executives will be lining up after the game.
Yeah, correct. So I think he does move, and it'll be to LA.
Yeah.
Not sure which one out of the Lakers and the Clippers. I'd like to see Clippers, but I think he'll move to LA.
And I feel like that'll be his. That'll probably be.
He's got a home there anyway, and his kids go to LA well. So.
Oh.
Yeah.
I feel like that's probably his biggest pull. I think his legacy would be at the forefront at the moment. I don't think he would be going for cash as much.
No.
He'd have sponsorship deals. He'd be loaded. I think he wants to think about winning a championship with someone that's never won it, or, you know, getting those film directors lined up. Correct?
Yeah.
Next question, we're going to talk about the Socceroos. A little bit about Bert van Marwijk, if I pronounced that right.
I think that's right.
Yeah, we'll go with it.
He's Dutch, that's all that matters.
Apologies to all of our Dutch podcast listeners. But he's obviously taken over the helm from Ange Postecoglou as the Socceroos coach. He's going to coach us through 2018 World Cup. Is he the right fit for the Socceroos, and can he bring us some success, Tom?
Well, I think it would have been better if Ange had stayed on until the World Cup and then left. I think he's left the Socceroos in a really bad situation, but given that, I think they have made the right decision. I mean, we saw with Gus Hiddink, who I believe is also Dutch, years back. He did a really good job with the team, getting them to the World Cup to the World Cup, I should say. I was going to say finals, but that's not right.
The 2006 ones, wasn't it? And the Italian dive has gone down in infamy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
But I think they've made the right decision here. Bert was, of course, the coach who took Netherlands to the final. I think it was 2 World Cups ago.
Mm-hmm.
We might need to look that up.
2010.
Yep. So, 2 World Cups ago. I think he'll do wonders for the Australian team. And if the players can get behind him and listen to what he has to say, then I think they're certainly in with a chance to win some games rather than just be in the World Cup.
Correct. And it's interesting, he obviously had a lot of success with Saudi Arabia because he took them, I think it might have been the most recent World Cup, he was the first coach to allow them to qualify. Or they might have played in the World Cup, but I obviously need to check this all out. Mm. But that's where his legacy is. And Australia have played a lot of soccer against the Saudi Arabians.
Yeah,
so,
being in the Asian League, yeah.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see whether he still already has a pretty sound idea of the way Australia plays and can adapt to that pretty quickly. So for me, it's a big yes. I think someone said that he was on about $1 million for only a few months of work, which is pretty cruisy for him.
Mm.
But if he can bring success, and for what that'll, if they have the similar success to 2006, and what that'll do for soccer in Australia would be huge. So worth every cent.
Yeah, I agree. I think he's very well credentialed for the role, and he's definitely the right choice for us. I think we just needed a voice outside of the realm of Australian football. So I quite like it, and obviously he's had success being part of the coaching lineup there for the Netherlands, taking them to the 2010 World Cup final, and also success in 2014. So yep, he's the right choice, and I particularly like that. I agree with Caleb there in terms of him coaching Saudi Arabia. They obviously qualified ahead of us in the Asian qualifiers for the World Cup. So he knows our game, he knows our weaknesses, so hopefully he fixes them, and also he knows a little bit about Saudi Arabian football and the way other Asian football sides play. So he's perfect for the World Cup and potentially even future years.
Correct.
Yeah. There was some animosity a few years back with one of the foreign coaches. I can't remember his name, unfortunately, but basically the team didn't like the way he was coaching them, and of course there was some animosity there. Could there be a similar thing happening with Bert in this new team?
Hope not.
Hope not.
Yeah. Particularly with the 2018 campaign, I feel like we're in a pretty good spot. A lot of people forget that we smashed that Asian Cup in 2014 or 15?
2015.
It's a pretty successful campaign. Our qualifying, obviously, we had to do it the hard way, and that's not great leading in, but I am optimistic. I think he could be the one that takes us far. He coached Dortmund, for example, which is a huge club in the German Bundesliga. So pretty good resume, and I, for one, am just glad it wasn't Graham Arnold, because he didn't have that much success when he coached Australia before.
Yeah. All right, so that's done for soccer. We're going to finish off the podcast with 2 NFL-based questions. So the Super Bowl will be played tomorrow morning. We've recorded this obviously on a Sunday night, so it'll be played tomorrow morning. And it's been played in Minnesota, and it's going to be around negative minus 17 degrees. So it's going to be very, very, very cold. So the question is, should the Super Bowl be played at permanent venues, so say like in your sunny cities like Miami, California, all that, or should it be shared around with all clubs? So this is an example of like the AFL Grand Final being played at the MCG every season. I mean, obviously, and there's talk, the Perth Premier this week, or last week I think it was, maybe he came out and wanted the Grand Final to be played at Optus Stadium, so there's a little bit of talk around that. But AFL Grand Final should be played still at the MCG. So question back to the NFL, should it be played at permanent venues or should it be shared with all clubs as it is at the moment?
It's a tough one, yeah, but I'm happy with the way that the Super Bowl currently works. So rather than have it played at the one venue every year as the AFL does, they tend to share it around the bigger stadiums. And I think in recent years they've also done it so that there's no home ground advantage. So you've still got a 50-50 spread of the teams, which is what I like. I mean, when you see an AFL game between a Melbourne team and an interstate team and you just see the Melbourne team flooding the ground, it sort of ruins the vibe in a way. I felt that way with the Adelaide-Richmond Grand Final last year. Mm. That's just me, though. But
well, actually, to be fair, though, Minnesota actually almost made the Super Bowl final.
Yeah. And that
was... what was it? Was it AFC
that
were
the
or
Vikings?
NFC? Yeah, the Vikings, yeah. They got to the... What conference are they in?
I couldn't tell you. AFC?
Who did they lose to? They lost to Philadelphia. Mm. Yeah, they lost to the Eagles. So they actually... They could have made it. So,
that's the thing. It was
sorry to butt in there, but no. That probably eliminates your point. So because they do it in about maybe 2 to 3 years in advance.
Yeah. Mm.
So they're going to have no idea how well the teams are going to go.
I think that was
going to
be the first time since they started doing the rotating stadiums that they were going to be at this. They might have had a home ground advantage.
Yeah.
Close.
Well, anyway, my recent memory also. Yeah.
Well, actually, I wasn't aware that Philadelphia won against Minnesota, so there might be a bit of animosity at that home ground. There might be a lot of Patriots fans there that day.
Yeah.
But, but back to the original question. Yeah, I don't see why it should be moved into permanent address or anything like that. But as for the weather...
Even for the weather, yeah.
Yeah, as for the weather, minus 17 degrees, I mean, that's...
Not ideal.
Not ideal. It's not unusual for American football
obviously
or
not.
Soccer. Mm.
A Super Bowl, though.
Yeah.
For a Super Bowl, minus 17 degrees.
What I was saying before, there was an earlier game where they were playing in literally in snow, and they had to carve out the line markings in where the grass was in the ground. So you had these green lines running through this white snow. It was quite something to see. But minus 17 degrees, I would prefer that any day to the 50 degree heat that our cricketers played in. I mean, at least if it's minus 17, you can keep warm, you can run around, things like that. Whereas if it's any hotter than that, you know, you're really struggling.
Yeah.
For me, I've just finished watching season of Fargo, which is set in Minnesota, and I get cold watching that. So I don't know. I think it's going to be... It's minus 17 is incredibly cold. I reckon I get chilly when it hits about 15 degrees in Melbourne. So
to put this into perspective, ice cream is recommended to be frozen at minus 18. So it is quite cold.
That's frozen.
Yeah, I think that's a bit far. But obviously, as you said, plan 2 to 3 years in advance. And Minnesota's a big town, a big city, pardon me. So
big state, even.
Big state.
It's always cold there. So.
Yes. There you go. I think... it's unfortunate, but the Super Bowl will sell out and it'll be a cracking game. So, irrespective, I don't think the weather will be too big of a problem. What about you, Ben?
This is hard. I've heard both of your points, but I still want to see it played at those permanent venues purely just because, if you know it's cold, maybe what they should do is they could still share it around, but maybe not play it in these cold states, for example. Because no matter how much we can sugarcoat it, minus 17 degrees is not pretty to play football and it's not pretty to watch football. Mm-hmm. So for all the fans there, you can put as many coats as you want, you're still going to be cold. So it doesn't make for a great spectacle for the fans to watch it, not great for the players. And, I mean, you're still going to get your TV viewers, but I think maybe they should prevent it from being in these cold, extremely cold states.
So you're thinking maybe states like California, Texas,
exactly.
Florida.
So just rotate it around that. So pretty much, I'm a yes, they should... played at these permanent venues.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Fair enough. Last question.
Yeah, last question. should we even care about the Super Bowl?
I think we should. I mean, it's these
nice
like
and quick, yeah.
These are like sports stars at the pinnacle of their particular field. I personally enjoy gridiron. I think it's a fascinating, entertaining game, but better than rugby. Yeah, controversy. There's lots of angry letters coming to Sin tomorrow morning.
Hopefully we don't have any New South Wales or Queensland listeners. Please turn off your station now.
These are two, the New England Patriots in particular, they're one of the greatest sports teams of all time, they say. I think we should be excited and we should get on board.
I don't enjoy it as much as other sports, but I'll definitely be tuning in tomorrow. And for the sake of all of the American films that I've watched that have some form of gridiron involved, it's impossible not to take an interest.
Yep, I agree with both of you there. I mean, the Super Bowl is pretty much the showcase sporting event in the world. So there's no doubting about that. It's a great spectacle. American football, it's kind of boring. I'm not a huge fan of it during the season. I usually tend to watch it around this stage. So I'm a huge bandwagon NFL supporter, you could say that.
I actually do the same with the AFL. If Essendon's not winning, I sort of tune out. And then August, I start to take an interest again as the finals come up.
It's a great spectacle. You love it. So I think we should care about the Super Bowl.
Boom.
All right, that pretty much wraps up the first edition of the Sports Desk podcast here on Sin for 2018. It's been a pleasure having both you, Tom, and Caleb on board. You've enjoyed the show?
Absolutely. All mine. Thank you.
Beautiful. So we'll be back in a fortnight's time. We'll upload the show on Sunday nights as always. Do tune in to the Sports Desk during the week, Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays from 9 to 10 a.m. You listen to the Sports Desk podcast here on Sin, where we talk nothing but sport, the games which unite the people of the world.